As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast lore behind the Mass Effect games.
Specters, we're back. Welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. It's been a while. We've been on vacation and doing all sorts of other things because the month of December is absolutely crazy, but it is a brand new year, 2024. And speaking of new things, Sam, we didn't put this in the show notes, but we've got new t-shirts up on the Patreon.
That's right. We just designed them. Yeah. They are modeled after some of the corporations in Mass Effect. So
yeah.
Go take a look.
They're a little late. We could have swapped them out a few months ago, but that allows people who signed up a little bit later to get the fourth shirt. So I don't feel so bad about that. But four new brand new shirts. If you sign up, get on there. You can get all four shirts this year every 3 months. So go check out the Patreon if you're interested in that. I think the designs are awesome, but I'm the one who made them, so I'm a little bit biased. But here we are. I'm Tom. This is Sam. We're talking about, I'm taking a look at the show notes. Saren in Mass Effect 1?
Yeah.
Mass Effect 1? Everyone's going to be like, Tom doesn't play the games. Absolutely, yeah, he was in Mass Effect 1.
Yeah, for reference, before anyone jumps in the angry review mode, Tom's being facetious.
I'm making a joke.
He's doing the dad thing where he purposefully gets something wrong just to piss you off because it's funny to him.
It's true. I've been a dad for a very long time.
So yes, we are talking about Saren in Mass Effect 1. You know, three, four episodes ago, we went and talked about his tragic origin story with his brother, how he's pretty much always hated humanity, and how he met your artifact. We now need to cover the course of his indoctrination. We had gone up to that point. Now he meets Sovereign at the end of Mass Effect Revelation. And now we have to cover, you know, what happens to him over the course of his indoctrination and then obviously his ultimate fate.
Right. So you can either listen to this episode of the podcast, which will be about an hour long, or you can go play all of Mass Effect 1 and get the same information.
Pretty much. Yeah. This is going to be a Reader's Digest version of Mass Effect 1.
Basically. All right. So let's get into it because we got to talk about Saren. I'm sure like we normally do, we'll get into some other details that you may have missed if you play through the games or whatever. But here, let's kick us off. Where do we start?
Okay. So first, I think we need to talk about Saren's appearance. You know, I try not to when we were talking about the comics because the artwork in the comics isn't really consistent. And when you're talking about a novel like Mass Effect Revelation, doesn't have the same kind of punch as depicting someone in a game, right?
So, unless you're reading graphic novels, but that's the same as a comic book, which wouldn't be a novel.
Don't graphic novels technically have more text?
Do they? I guess they do. They're also thicker. In my mind, it's always been just like, oh, here's 12 comics all put into one little, like, one bound thing, yeah. Right? Like, it's kind of the same thing, but a little bit different. I don't know.
Speaking of analog media, I have a book here next to me, and it was actually a gift from one of the previous patrons of this podcast. It is the Art of Mass Effect book, and my camera is blurring it out. I don't know why.
Because you have the background blur, and it doesn't read it as a face, so...
Here we go.
Yeah, put it close to your face. Oh, no, it's
there
like,
we go.
It's like, oh, that's not a face anymore.
Okay, well, yeah. Anyway, it's Arya on the front. And so I'm going to be pulling a lot of details from this book. That's why I'm showing it. Very great insight as to the designs and why they chosen to go with the designs that they did for a lot of different characters and races and places and awesome things in this book. So about Saren. We learn about his appearance and how it changed throughout the development process.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be putting some of those images up on the screen. So if you are watching on the video version, either in the stream or on the video on YouTube later, then go check it out. You can see some of these images.
Yes. And some helpful person must have gotten the digital form of this Art of Mass Effect book because they uploaded them to Reddit. I don't know what their username is. But they uploaded these screenshots of the design choices for Saren's original or some of his original designs. This one, he's wearing this full body black outfit and it has a type of black cloak covering his back. And that extends over his right shoulder. And there's a frontal portion of this cloak that drapes down his chest and it's in front of his legs. Now, I don't really want to call these robes. Would you call them robes, Tom?
It's like it almost looks like an extended vest. I don't know. I mean, it goes down in the front. You know, it reminds me of almost like priestly, you know, when you have like the thing that they wear around their neck and shoulders that hangs down in the front. It's almost like that. Like a shawl. Like, yeah, maybe it's called a shawl. He looks Darth Vader-esque with almost more priestly elements.
Yeah. Yeah, Fat Batman in chat here on Twitch says, Saren's doing his best Palpatine cosplay.
Yeah,
very accurate.
Kind of similar. Yeah. Yeah. It's all very black. Even his face is all gray and black and colorless.
Yes. And it just looks very Sith-like, as Day here points out in our Twitch chat as well. Looks very Sith-like. Think of a Sith Lord. And you have Sith Lord Saren. That looks like some of Saren's original designs here. And it's not the typical armor that we see in the actual game in Mass Effect 1. This is not what we see. It's very different, you know.
And this is what he wears at home when he's relaxing and feeling more comfortable.
This is his lounge wear.
Maybe it's his lounge wear, if you know what I mean.
Let me slip into something more comfortable, Matriarch.
oh, sexy Saren. Oh, no.
The weird thing is that he's depicted as this, but he's thin and he's gaunt. And I think the fourth slide of that Reddit post shows exactly the page that I'm talking about here. Oof. In the art book.
Oh, yeah.
He's thin and he's gaunt. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you can see it. He doesn't look strong. Where at the bottom of this page, it shows the final design of Saren in Mass Effect 1. Very strong and heroic looking, right?
Yeah, his shoulders get broader. His arms are thicker. His legs are thicker. Like, he looks like he actually has muscles. Whereas the image at the top is, like, it's creepy. It's almost like his arms and legs are too long.
Spindly, like a dying tree.
Yeah, like salad fingers.
Oh, God.
My like belly to basket.
I like to touch rusty beacons.
It's been so long since I watched Salad Fingers, but what does he call the dolls that he has? Emily something something. I don't remember. We'd have to. Somebody's probably yelling.
I don't know.
At their,
but imagining anyway. Saren as Salad Fingers is pretty hilarious.
Saren Fingers?
So I think this, well, it's a joke, right? But it's an accurate joke as to like the feeling, the vibe that this design gives off and just how different it is from the Saren that we get to know in the games.
Yeah.
And the other interesting thing is he looks feeble because he's depicted as using a cane in his left hand. So it's not just that he's like old and thin, but he looks weak.
Right. Which is really weird for a Spectre. You know, like, how are you going around the galaxy taking out bad guys and fighting the good fight if you got to walk around with a cane?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and the other thing is you see this kind of electrical kind of design coming off of his right hand. And we know from the writing underneath that little commentary from the art team that that is supposed to be biotics. He is supposed to be the artists write that, you know, they depicted him, quote, as an older, physically weaker character who still possesses incredibly powerful biotics.
Ah. Okay, so that's why the cane and all that. But there's also, like, all these faces, like, sketched on the side, all these variations of his head and his face and the design.
That's right.
I don't know. What are those pieces called on, I don't know, the sides of his face?
Oh, his mandibles?
Yeah, mandibles. There you go. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I love those sketches, too, because they vary a lot. Right. One of the things that I love about this entire art book is that there are multiple sketches for multiple characters. And it looks like you can follow the brainstorming process. It's like a string of consciousness, and all are just ideas for how Saren's face should look. None of them are colored in. None of them are finalized, right? And they all reflect Saren having a wildly different personality type than how we saw him in Mass Effect 1. You know, in Mass Effect 1, we get to meet him and he's this, like, boastful, arrogant, you know, powerful dickhead is who he is. And yet, a lot of these are different. Like, for example, they have little descriptors written next to the little sketches. There's one of them called The Weary General. And that one looks like Saren is tired, but he's like worn out, but he's distinguished, you know? Uh-huh. And maybe a bit sad even. I'm he's the weary general. It works pretty well. And then there's also the quote, scared and pissed design. Or I'm sorry, not scared. Scared and pissed. Scared. You're both afraid, but also mad.
I'm really angry, but I'm so ready to get out of here.
That's not what it says. It says scarred and pissed.
Oh, okay.
I apparently cannot read today.
It's very small. It's hard for me to even make it bigger on the stream for people to see in detail. I recommend going and looking up the actual book. But
what she said? So the scarred and pissed design is exactly as it sounds. You know, half of Saren's face is scarred to hell and back, and he kind of looks totally disfigured like the Phantom of the Opera, where he might have one of those, you know, like half face masks or something like that. And of course he looks pissed off. There's also the insane design where Saren is wide-eyed and he looks like he's, you know, mentally in some other galaxy. There's the haunted designs, which show him like he has, you know, I've seen some shit, man. And it looks like he's going through an episode of traumatic flashbacks, which if you've been through what Saren's been through, you may develop PTSD. So that was an interesting design choice that they went with for that. And then they also have one that just says brutal past. And it looks like he's had a rough upbringing that shaped him into the ruthless asshole that he is today. You know, think Clint Eastwood meets Danny Trejo.
Okay. Yeah, these are really cool. I've been able to make them a little bit larger on the stream, but it's still low resolution enough that it's hard to read the text. But we're doing the best.
Do you have a favorite design here?
I like the one where he's kind of the bottom left one where he just looks like a scared ghost. I can't read what that one says.
Yes, that's the insane one.
That's the insane one. Yeah, that one's pretty good. That one, but they all are distinct and different. This is what I love about concept art. And I was looking at some other concept art the other day for some other game, and the way that you can see the thought process of the creators, because they know who the character is, or maybe the character is in the midst of being written, but they're going through these different design options and actually putting them down on paper so that the team can look at them and go, okay, which one of these feels like the character that we're actually working into the story? And then it ends up focusing down on one of them, right? And then eventually we get the character that we all know and despise.
And I think what's so cool is you also see, like, we expect as players that the writing team just kind of sends over an idea for how the character is going to be, if not a complete storyline for him. And then they let the art team go from that. But it's a back and forth, it seems, because it almost seems like the art team I don't know this for sure. It seems like the art team may have influenced Saren's character as it's written.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I imagine there's some synergy there between both the writers and the artists and everybody working together over a period of time to really flesh out all of these characters. So we have some other images. Should we jump to those?
That's right. So the artists, you know, they wrote that they didn't want Saren to look like most Turians in some aspects, but in other aspects they did. So they write, "We went with a distinctive crest and visible Reaper machinery to reflect his indoctrination." In the final design, they went with that. Mm-hmm. And this part is interesting to me because there they tried to distinguish Saren from the rest of the Turian population. This distinctive crest, you know, on the top of his head. One of our listeners actually commented on a YouTube video recently and said, you know, "Are you guys ever going to talk about why Saren has those little things that extend from his cheeks backward?" Mm-hmm. Well, now we are. Yeah. On the next page in the art book, the artists show designs of his head with varying jewelry and crests and more. And they say that they went with his final design because they wanted to, quote, allow him to blend into society rather than to be an obvious monstrosity.
Well, I mean, it totally makes sense because he's a character that you, at least in the beginning of the game, you're not 100% sure about. So you don't want to be like, "Oh, well, this clearly looks like a bad guy."
And a character that is not just accepted by society, but uplifted by society.
Right, right. People see him as a heroic figure, even though he does some terrible things. But that's kind of what you're supposed to do as a Spectre, is make those hard decisions. And as the story continues on, we start to realize how terrible he actually is.
Right. He's feared, certainly, but he's also revered. And, you know, he holds this place of high respect as a Spectre. And that kind of, you know, this kind of goes back to the early piston scarred design about, you know, allowing him to blend into society rather than to be an obvious monstrosity like they wrote. Well, when you look at the piston scarred design, I'm wondering if an early idea for Saren's character was to have him as that alienated, disfigured veteran archetype. You know, who has come back from war or combat completely disfigured, and much like the Phantom of the Opera, you know, that was an allegory for World War One soldiers. I believe it was World War One. Which war was it? That's an allegory.
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that one.
Someone that's listening to this will know, but I do know that the Phantom of the Opera was supposed to be an allegory for how many soldiers were coming back from a war and they were very disfigured. They had PTSD, although they didn't call it that then.
Right.
And then they would go into isolation because they were also rejected from society, from how they looked. But this is all to say that, you know, that if they had gone with the piston scar design for Saren, I'm wondering if they knew that they would have to commit to making him that, quote, monstrosity. And they didn't want to do that.
Right, right. It's a step too far, I guess. I guess you could say. All right. So, okay. By the start of Mass Effect 1, he definitely looks more like a warrior, right? We talked about how we went through these designs where he looks older or more frail. But we get to this point where he's a warrior. He has armor. His facial features are, I don't know, more tough, a little bit more masculine, even though he's an alien and he doesn't really have human features, right? Like,
that's he looks more macho bird like, yes.
Macho bird, yes.
Yes. Macho okay. Bird Randy Saren.
Oh, no. All right. Okay.
Yeah. And so that takes us to the very beginning of the game when we meet him. So, you know, we've now gone over the origin art designs. And now we get to the very beginning of Mass Effect 1 when we being the player, not Shepard, but we first see Saren. Here's that scene.
Nihlus.
This isn't your mission, Saren. What are you doing here?
The Council thought you could use some help on this one.
I wasn't expecting to find the Geth here. The situation's bad.
Don't worry. I've got it under control.
Oh, that scene.
Pow. And he's dead. And he, you know? Yeah. So thanks to the Mass Effect world on YouTube for that clip. But yeah, that's our first impression of Saren. And you can tell right away that he looks different from all the other Turians. You know, he's got those distinctive crests on the sides of his head, on the top of his head. And there's the unmistakable evidence of cybernetic implants.
Right.
In Saren.
Right.
The interesting thing was there's a mod called Saren Stages Mod, where if you play on PC, you might want to download this mod. It institutes a complete change from how Saren looked in the from the very beginning of the game through the end of the game. And you start off in the very beginning of Mass Effect 1 with Saren in those black robes from the concept art.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
And then throughout the game, he becomes more and more cybernetic because he's accepting more and more Reaper tech into his body.
Right.
And there's even dialogue that's written that kind of supports that and was already included in the game. So great mod. If you're interested in lore friendly stuff, I highly recommend that one. But yeah, that's our first impression, that clip that we played. Talk about setting off on the wrong foot.
Yeah, I mean, he clearly comes out of the gate like, oh, shooting another guy in the back of the head. Totally. But then you go back to the scenes at the Citadel and like people are trusting him and he seems trustworthy. So I totally get why he didn't look like a Sith Lord from the beginning. And that mod totally makes sense because in the early parts of the game where people are still trusting him, he seems trustworthy. Like he looks like kind of a regular Turian still. Right. But then that progresses and that's cool. That's a really cool idea for a mod.
Yeah, no, I have played with the mod and it's striking because his eyes are also a different color. In the very beginning, his eyes are yellow and they're a piercing yellow. And you have Saren in these robes and you're like, oh, okay, this guy looks a little intimidating, but kind of harmless, you know?
Right, right.
And then he pulls the gun and you're like, whoa. Right. So I wonder how the reception would have been different if that had been the original choice from BioWare. But, you know, that's how we see Saren regardless. He pulls out the gun and he shoots Nihilus in the back of the head. Absolutely ruthless to our poor little beloved Nihilus, who people really love. He's very popular.
For being so shortly fandom. In the game. Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
And he has questionable morality that we don't learn about until later, but we learn that he's not really a great guy anyway, and people still really love him, but whatever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, right after that, Saren instructs the Geth that are with him to destroy Eden Prime and leave no trace of the beacon, you know?
Yeah.
Shepard eventually touches the beacon, and we will get to how Saren takes this after the midbreak.
All right, let's go thank our patrons. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this
Lorecast
is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. Thank you, everybody, for your support. Thank you for sticking with us for as long as you have and for being here today. This is the place where we get to thank our patrons, and we have some new ones that have signed up over the break. Hopefully, I'm not repeating anybody, but if I am, you get two call-outs. Raquel L., Hannah L., Connor, Evil S., I think is how you pronounce that, and Kim W. Thank you for signing up. Welcome to the Patreon. Thank you for your support. We're so glad that you are here. Also, we have to shout out our Shepherd tier patrons, Kolkashins, Edboy, Kira C., Lieutenant Tosino, and William. Thank you so much for your support as well. And to all 65 of our current patrons, thanks for being here. If you are interested in getting ad-free episodes, some of those new t-shirts, stickers, those designs are stickers as well. If you don't want to go all the way up to the t-shirt tier or joining us on future chats, any of that stuff, head over to patreon.com/MassEffectLorecast to check everything out. Also, Sam, we've got some really nice reviews that have come in over the break. Let's take a minute and go through them. People like to write a lot, so I'll try to read these as quick as I can. This one is from Riley Twilly in the United States, who writes, "Great source of lore. After my most recent playthrough of the trilogy, I decided I wanted more Mass Effect content. I ended up stumbling upon this podcast, and it's been great. Sam is super knowledgeable, and Tom is a great host. I love the connections to our real world. I've been binging the show for a couple of months now, and I'm almost caught up. Looking forward to catching the show live before long." Well, thank you so much, Riley. This one comes from The Wandering Turian, who writes, also from the United States, "Best podcast in the Milky Way. Been listening from the beginning. The chemistry between hosts Tom and Sam is incredible. Their ability to convey the lore while also breaking it up and making it fun with little side tangents and jokes makes it nice to listen to while at work on a busy day. The number of times my bosses looked at me like I was a madman because I was laughing so much and the funny comments and jokes. Seriously, these guys do a great job explaining the lore of the galaxy. I've been a fan of the trilogy since I discovered Mass Effect 2 and played it multiple times. I thought I knew about a lot, but these guys have proved me wrong. I have learned so much while listening. Great job, guys. Keep it up. Keela Salai." Thank you so much, Wandering Turian. And then one more from Dr. Dax9, also in the United States, who writes, "This podcast is a blast. Oh, I finally caught up on all the episodes and figured it was time to write a review. A friend recommended Mass Effect to me years ago, but it wasn't until recently that I had a system I could play it on. After playing the Legendary Edition for the first and second time, I went looking for a lore podcast I could listen to. Certain that one must exist. This was exactly what I was hoping to find. Fun and informative. I would definitely consider this a must listen for Mass Effect fans. I'm now on my third playthrough and first modded playthrough, and it's cool to have more of the lore I've learned from this podcast in the back of my mind while playing. I've also picked up the novels and comics and have started on those, and I'm really enjoying them. Thank you, Tom and Sam, for a great and obviously passion-filled podcast. Thank you to all of you for all of your support. Thank you for all these reviews, for rating the show on Spotify and all those other platforms, for sharing with your friends like some of these people. All of that is extremely helpful. We really do appreciate it. All right, let's move on with the rest of the show.
Spit it out, or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
Another hand touches the beacon. Oh, wait, that's a different game series. So how does Saren know that Shepard touches the beacon?
Meridia. No, it's not Meridia.
It's a Daedric Prince from Elder Scrolls. Cool.
I actually don't know. I'm just going to be straight up with you. I don't know how Saren knows definitively that Shepard touches the beacon at the very early part of the game. His companion and maybe lover, I'm not entirely sure about whether Matriarch Benezia and Saren were lovers. It feels like it strongly hints at it, but I don't think it ever tells us verbatim. I might be wrong about that. If I am, someone tell me. But
I'm sure somebody's got art out there that makes it a little bit more obvious.
Yes, I'm sure. There are more than a few Saren Mancers, by the way. I've seen them on Twitter. They scare me. But so Benezia tells Saren, while they are flying aboard Sovereign, that the Normandy was there at Eden Prime, and specifically that it's commanded by Captain Anderson. This is interesting that Benezia would think to bring this up, because this is information that Saren would want to know. Hey, that ship is commanded by Captain Anderson. But if you think about it, Benezia would have to know Saren's background to know that he would want to know that it was Anderson's ship.
Yeah, we talked about how they already knew each other and all of that on the previous episodes. Yeah.
Exactly. Otherwise, you know, who cares about some random Alliance captain?
Right.
But Benezia apparently knows that Saren would care. implicating that they have confided in each other, at least something about their backgrounds. And typically, Saren is very tight-lipped.
Yeah, well, that totally makes sense. I mean, I think that's a very easy sequence to pull together. Otherwise, why even have the dialogue?
Right. But what's truly interesting here in this scene is that Saren only loses his temper not after Benezia tells him that it was a human vessel and not that it was Anderson's. No, that's not what pisses him off. Not that they even saved the colony or necessarily that they took the beacon intact. What really pisses Saren off is that a human may have touched the beacon. May. Benezia says Shepard or one of the humans may have touched the beacon, and he rages. He's like, rah! He just fucking throws shit around. And then he grabs Benezia's face in a very weird way that I don't, it's cringe, honestly, at this point, but it's like he grabs her face and it's like, why are you the way that you are? And then he kind of lets go. So we're taught very early on that Saren is emotionally unstable.
Yeah, that seems pretty obvious.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
He's the kind of dad to take his kid to Chuck E. Cheese and give him two tokens and say, that's what you get. And when the kid is, you know, visibly upset, he like, you know, screams at the kid and then threatens violence and be like a totally rational person.
Fine. I tried to do something nice. We're just going to go home then. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so, yeah, this is kind of scary from Saren because this is still at the very beginning of the game, and it's scary how he flips between raging psycho and well in control sociopath when he's talking to the council in front of Shepard.
Yeah. So even from those early clips, like the one we showed earlier, the voice acting, the way he speaks feels very in control, almost like even though he's doing bad things, you kind of trust him a little bit. But then like the flip out part and it's just like, OK. This is kind of bonkers, too. So we know the council doesn't take kindly to us accusing their best operative of targeting humanity, right?
No. And to be fair, Shepard also accuses him of being involved in some grand galactic conspiracy. So I understand that Shepard does indeed look like the crazy one here. But how Saren plays the council and how they allow themselves to be played is truly concerning to me. And we have a clip.
Read the Eden Prime reports, Ambassador. The testimony of one traumatized dock worker is hardly compelling proof.
I resent these accusations. Nihlus was a fellow Spectre and a friend.
That just let you catch him off guard.
Captain Anderson, you always seem to be involved when humanity makes false charges against me. And this must be your protege, Commander Shepard. The one who let the beacon get destroyed.
You're the one who destroyed the beacon. Then you tried to cover it up.
Shift the blame to cover your own failures. Just like Captain Anderson. He's taught you well. But what can you expect from a human?
Saren despises humanity. That's why he attacked Eden Prime.
Your species needs to learn its place, Shepard. You're not ready to join the Council. You're not even ready to join the Spectres.
He has no right to say that. That's not his decision.
Shepard's admission into the Spectres is not the purpose of this meeting.
This meeting has no purpose. The humans are wasting your time, Counselor, and mine.
Saren's hiding behind his position as a Spectre. You need to open your eyes.
What we need is evidence. So far, we've seen nothing.
There is still one outstanding issue. Commander Shepard's vision. It may have been triggered by the beacon.
Are we allowing dreams into evidence now? How can I defend my innocence against this kind of testimony?
How can I defend my innocence against dreams?
Right? So, first of all, thank you to Jaguar550 on YouTube for uploading that. Jaguar is prolific in uploading Mass Effect scenes. Very helpful for Mass Effect people trying to educate themselves. So, some takeaways from that clip. Saren simultaneously plays the victim card, but also paints humanity as being incapable and fumbling, unworthy of the title of Spectres or of joining the Council. And yet... they're also evil and targeting him.
So playing the victim, shifting the blame through racist or speciesist, sounds like something. I don't know.
I know someone who does this.
There's a pattern. All right.
Can't think of their name though.
What else? What other takeaways?
Yeah. So Sarah, and it's truly scary how skillfully Saren switches from that victim card to also painting humanity as bumbling around and dumb. But this is also this next point that I think is a key takeaway here is very intriguing when you look at this through a communication point of view. And I think for a lot of people who have been educated or trained in communication, you'll see it. Saren takes false offense to some of the things because he knows that he did it. Keep this in mind.
Right.
Saren knows he's doing these things, but he's taking false offense and he's gaslighting, and it's a way to control the narrative. If he can act like he's offended, though in the back of his mind, he knows he's doing these things, that it's an actual strategy taught in some marketing and advertising circles, even where you can control a conversation and steer it where you want it to go.
Oh, yeah. All of these tactics are so well known and not hard to do. if you're willing to lie and make crap up, even for your own gain, it's actually really easy to do this. And it's super effective. Which is super strange.
It's effective because most people aren't like that by nature.
Right.
So they don't think that other people are like that.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy. And it's very well written because this does ring true, right? Like this is a very real thing that happens.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about this when I was thinking about what writer was primarily responsible for writing these lines for Saren. And I was thinking, man, I wonder if they designed this part of Saren's dialogue after someone they knew in real life.
Maybe.
because it's way too accurate. Like, I know people who will talk like this and you're like,
yeah,
you're a sociopath.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this comes right from the narcissist playbook. And I've been around a number of those people in my life. And, I dated some. Yeah. I was even more close to some. We won't go into the details. But this is one of those things that when I do come across it in real life, like a friend is going through a situation, red flags immediately. And I'm like, I have to pull them aside and be like, hey, this is what's happening. This is a pattern, just so you know. And they're like, and then later they come back to me and they go, oh my God, you were totally right. And it is a thing. Like, this is very, very real.
Yeah. And also scary, the other end of this interaction, the council, they're silently agreeing with him. They're not saying they agree with him because they don't want that on the record.
Well, they're playing to the things that they're concerned about. They're concerned about humanity being good or useful or even honest with them. They're concerned they have a specter that they trust. They're concerned that they don't have enough information or facts, like he mentions, to actually make a real decision. And so they're going, well, I mean, we got to take him for what he's saying because they don't know.
And they won't say it, but they won't really reprimand Saren for his clearly racist comments at this point.
Right. Because some level, they kind of agree, right? Like, that's,
exactly.
That's what he's playing to.
If they disagreed, they would say it. And if the alien and human roles were flipped in this situation, we would all, I think, uniformly condemn the council's racism.
Right. Yeah. But at this point, the humans haven't proved themselves. So.
Right. But that's also the thing, that someone would need to prove themselves is also very reminiscent of real world racist behavior.
Absolutely. In this situation, we're also coming off of some conflicts that the humans were in, and they did some pretty terrible stuff on their side as well. So I would imagine that there's some caution on that end of it, but probably more than is actually warranted due to the racist tendencies and all of that.
And that kind of takes me to my next point, which is that the council has a horse in this race. Like you just mentioned, the First Contact War was not that long ago. The council helped broker the peace there because it was the peacekeeping race, the Turians, who were at war with the humans. But so realistically, I think the council isn't calling out Saren too heavily because they have a horse in this race. If it turns out that their own Turian specter, who they've highly decorated throughout the years, was a racist terrorist attacking human colonies, even without the Reapers, this calls into question all the other operations that Saren has been on, including the one with Anderson, their justification for keeping humanity out of the Spectres to begin with.
Right.
It raises the question from the grave, literally, did the Council make the right call in accepting Saren's report about what happened with Anderson?
Yeah, yeah, it puts them in question and it starts making their decisions. They don't want to have to go through that. So it's easier to just say, okay, well, we still trust you.
Right. Otherwise, they're eating crow.
Right.
And not only that, but think of, as Udina would say, the political shitstorm. If it were revealed that the Council's golden boy was attacking human colonies. Just 26 years prior to Mass Effect 1's opening, humanity was at war with the Galactic Peacekeepers here, and tensions are frosty even in the beginning of Mass Effect 1. So this revelation of such magnitude could embolden some warhawks on both sides, but particularly in the Alliance, because unlike in 2157, humanity is now more integrated into the Citadel and Galactic community. So if those warhawks are emboldened and they're going through all of these different, you know, huge revelation, huge expose, you know, Council's golden specter attacking humanity, state-sponsored terrorism. You know, a war would be much more destructive because of how integrated humanity is with the Council and the Citadel, or not the Council, the Citadel now. And much more than simple pride, basically the question is, would the Council risk a reopened war instead of just siding with their trusted agent?
Yeah. There's a lot at stake here. Like this one reaction holds a lot of potential weight.
It threatens to upend, like, basically the entire narrative the Council's been giving for the past 26 years. So denying Shepard and embracing Saren is political damage control.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it makes sense. I mean, this, again, it rings true. This feels like real situations, like, especially from the outside, because we're like, well, we know the truth. It's so simple. But from the inside of that situation on the Council, this is a very, very delicate situation.
And I'm so glad that you brought that up about, like, you know, because I was going to say, if anyone's listening to this podcast and they're thinking, well, hold on, that, like, this is so, you know, banal and extracted from the truth that it's so far, like, why do you even care about all these different factors? Like, there's truth and not, because this is how real politicians think.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This is, I mean, there is a reason why on this show we talk about real world history and real world influences on the story. And it's because there are moments in the games like this that are absolutely, like, you could pull them right out of the history books of other situations where people have done very similar things, and they ring absolutely true.
Yeah. Shepard needed to bring them irrefutable proof that they themselves, the counselors, could not possibly wriggle out of or feign ignorance about or just, you know, turn a blind eye to. He needed to shove it in their face so that they had to take action. Politically, they must. And he didn't have that yet. But he does later in the game. Shepard was, you know, at this point, Shepard was like the trigger happy prosecutor whose perpetrator gets off in a mistrial. But, you know, later Shepard does find that recording with Tally and brings it forward. They put him on Saren's case.
So, I mean, it seems like Saren totally understands the Council's position, that they're in too deep, and he's using this to his advantage, right?
I think so, yeah. I think Saren is also an expert manipulator, and I think that he knows he's a good liar, too. And that may explain how he remains the only being to maintain an ongoing personal relationship with a Reaper.
Yeah, that's true, right?
Think about the entire series. If anyone else can name one single organic being that maintained a personal relationship, like mano-a-mano, to a singular Reaper, then let me know, because even the elusive man didn't.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he would be the next most likely. Okay, so let's move forward a little bit. Shepard keeps doing his investigation thing, right? And then when do they meet next in person?
So Shepard doesn't actually meet in person with Saren until Vermeier.
Yeah, because
they met over that holo call.
Saren's on like a holo call if you're not watching the video on this part of the story, right?
Right. He's on a holocall with the council, but Saren and Shepard don't actually meet face-to-face until Vermeier. It is that late in the game. And it's also where we get the big evil guy reveal. You know, here's my master plan. Like, that. Yeah. That's when we get it.
Right. Okay. So we've got another clip here. Check this out.
You've seen the vision from the beacon, Shepard. You of all people should understand what the Reapers are capable of. They cannot be stopped. Do not mire yourself in pointless revolt. Do not sacrifice everything for the sake of petty freedoms. The Protheans tried to fight, and they were utterly destroyed. Trillions dead. But what if they had bowed before the invaders? Would the Protheans still exist? A submission not preferable to extinction.
Do you really believe the Reapers will let us live?
So this part goes on, but part of what makes Saren such a good bad guy is that, like you said, he's a master manipulator. And I think part of being that is he understands. He's intelligent and he understands all the different sides. Like, he understands what the other side wants and what they're more willing to believe based on their hopes and their fears and all of that stuff. So he leverages it.
Oh yeah. He's a master tactician, as you can tell, and he applies the rules of combat to dialogue too. And I have some more thoughts about that, but first I want to listen to the next lines that he says.
Now you see why I never came forward with this to the Council. We organics are driven by emotion instead of logic. We will fight even when we know we cannot win.
And so that's kind of what I'm talking about. And when I first played through this, I remembered learning about Neville Chamberlain and his policy of appeasement leading up to World War II.
Right.
But now I think that comparing Saren to Neville Chamberlain is not too apt of a metaphor, because it's taking Saren's words at face value, right? When in reality, I think that Saren has a proven track record at this point in the lore of just being power hungry and saying whatever it is that he needs to say.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. Yes, he's first and foremost a manipulator and looking out for himself as opposed to trying to do things for some other goal, like
preserve peace.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I also understand that, you know, inevitably someone's going to say, come on guys, you're mentioning this, 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 and this, and these are retcons. You know, that part in the lore came out later than Mass Effect 1. And then they had to, you know, they were writing lore backward. And I understand that, but I'm also approaching this from a continuous lore timeline point of view. You know, if you live in this universe.
I also don't have an issue with that if it better clarifies things that happened earlier in the story that were ambiguous.
Yes. Yes. And that is a totally valid, you know, writing tactic too. In fact, sometimes it feels more natural that way. But think back to the coup attempt from his brother in the comics. He went hand in hand with this even before he understood really what the Reapers are or what kind of threat that they posed. And nothing about the Reapers led him to blow up that facility on the mission with Anderson. That was before he even met Sovereign.
Yeah.
So, you know, that this is my point, that, you know, he has just been power hungry even before he was indoctrinated.
Right. Right. Yeah. We know from those other stories what some of the core aspects of his personality are.
Right. So I think the whole, hey, let's play nice with the Reapers, it's our only chance to survive, is just another manifestation of Saren practicing expert level manipulation.
Yeah, he's taking advantage of a potential catastrophe to get more of the things that he wants, which is another political tactic that gets used all the time.
Yeah, never waste a good crisis.
Right. Okay, so, I mean, you bring up the Reapers here. What's their side of this? Like, are they taking advantage of this through him? Like, how is that working?
I think that's a, you know, fantastic point. So Saren, we've been basically accusing Saren of being the manipulator here, right?
Right. But we know that he is also being manipulated, right? Like there's two layers to this.
Exactly. So because Saren's speech here and his talks with the council are after he has met and incorporated, met Sovereign rather, and incorporated Reaper Tech into his own body, I think, you know, he's probably indoctrinated throughout the entirety of Mass Effect 1. He may have been brutal before, but now he's brutal and extremely cunning, and that is exceedingly dangerous, because he was power hungry, and now, you know, okay, Saren is manipulating us, or is it Saren in any way? Like, is this, are we even talking to Saren, right?
Right.
And the other scary thing is how we learn in the lore what life feels like from anyone who is fully indoctrinated. And this is, I'm reading through Mass Effect Redemption right now. It's the third novel in the Drew Karpyshyn trilogy. And for those who don't know, Drew Karpyshyn is one of the founding lore fathers of Mass Effect. And so Karpyshyn writes that Paul Grayson, who's a character in the book, he's watching as these Reapers use his body and his own voice to their will. And he's forced to just, like, watch them do it.
Like a captive in his own mind, or like his mind is captive in his own body, right? Like, so do you think that Saren is going through the same thing here?
I think it's possible. His indoctrination seems to be steadier and at a lower intensity over a longer period of time than Paul Grayson's. And we know from the lore that indoctrinating a subject too quickly leaves them physically and mentally inept, incapable of, you know, carrying out even more advanced tasks than moving big brick from point A to point B. And we know the Reapers needed Saren for more than just physical labor. So maybe not. Maybe Saren is kind of more aware and more in control, or at least maybe he thinks he is.
Or it's like a subconscious manipulation of him that he's unaware of. Like, they've been planting things that he wants in his consciousness or in his subconsciousness, and then he acts on it the way that they would hope he would act on it without fully being controlled.
Right. Maybe he's getting certain granules of ideas in his mind where he thinks it's his own, but it's not.
Right.
And then, you know, he's running with them. But I think that by the time that we meet him in Mass Effect 1, especially after he mentions more upgrades with Reaper Tech, he is quite far along in this indoctrination. So I think it's possible that by the end of Mass Effect 1, he's indeed watching his own body fulfill the Reaper's demands.
That's so terrifying. That's so creepy.
Like, yeah. And here's my case in point. Let's watch his final conversation with Shepard with this in mind.
You've lost. You know that, don't you? In a few minutes, Sovereign will have full control of all the Citadel systems. The relay will open. The Reapers will return.
I've still got a few tricks up my sleeve.
You survived our encounter on Vermeier, but I've changed since then. Improved. Sovereign has upgraded me.
You let Sovereign implant you? Are you insane?
I suppose I should thank you, Shepard. After Vermeier, I couldn't stop thinking about what you said. About Sovereign manipulating me. About indoctrination. The doubts began to eat away at me. Sovereign sensed my hesitation. I was implanted to strengthen my resolve. Now my doubts are gone. I believe in Sovereign completely. I understand that the Reapers need organics. Join us, and Sovereign will find a place for you, too.
Sovereign's controlling you through your implants. Don't you see that?
The relationship is symbiotic. Organic and machine intertwined. A union of flesh and steel. The strengths of both, the weaknesses of neither. I am a vision of the future, Shepard. The evolution of all organic life. This is our destiny. Join Sovereign and experience a true rebirth.
Sovereign hasn't won yet. I can stop it from taking control of the station. Step aside and the invasion will never happen.
We can't stop it. Not forever. You saw the visions. You saw what happened to the Protheans. The Reapers are too powerful.
Some part of you must still realize this is wrong. You can fight this.
Maybe you're right. Maybe there is still a chance for the implants. Sovereign is too strong. I'm sorry. It is too late for me.
It's not over yet. You can still redeem yourself.
Goodbye, Shepard. Thank you.
So we mentioned Star Wars stuff earlier, Darth Vader and Palpatine. There, I mean, clearly it's not directly the same thing, but there is a lot of Star Wars in this scene, particularly. This whole,
oh, yeah.
The dark side has corrupted me. No, the Reapers have corrupted me. I'm no longer in control. I'm too far in. I can't change it. Oh, but maybe I'm not. Oh, what can I do about it? Like that is very Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so this is the Paragon dialogue choice where you can kind of try and snap Saren out of it. And I feel like there is a definitive moment in that conversation where Saren takes control of his mind again.
Right. Right. He reemerges. Like there is a very clear line between these are all the things I'm supposed to be saying because I am being controlled. And then all of a sudden Saren's personality comes back out and he's like, oh, God, OK, no, maybe I don't have control.
And well, I'm like comparing this to the way that Karpshin describes it in a later book with indoctrination, like literally being that prisoner in your own mind and you're not even saying the things.
Yeah.
But it's using your voice. And I seriously start to wonder, it feels somewhat like for most of that conversation, we are talking to Saren's body, but it's the Reapers who are replying to us.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. The Reapers are in control. And then all of a sudden he kind of comes back out. Right. Like
right.
He reemerges and takes a little bit of control back and then it's done.
Right. And I'm not being metaphorical. I mean, the Reapers are literally referring to themselves in third person.
Right. Right.
And the Reapers are literally trying to corrupt Shepard now.
Right.
That's what's happening.
Right.
And so it's the same kind. And here's another reason why I think this speech from Saren right here is the same kind of demotivating arrogance, the all your hope is lost, give in, that we get from Sovereign. It's the same kind of rhetoric we get from Sovereign directly on Ilos. It's like Sovereign hacked into Saren's Facebook account and is messaging people like, it is me, I am Saren. Hello, right. I need money.
Right, right. What? Nobody calls me by my full name. This is suspicious. Yeah, yes, right. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that's absolutely what's happening here.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, there's the whole, you know, and he, in like Saren, it's clear that Saren takes control either metaphorically or literally of his own mind and basically says, I know I will not have control of my mind for very long.
Right. And that's why he shoots himself, is because he's going, okay, he probably realizes how hard he'd had struggle internally to even get that moment where he was now in control of himself again. And he probably also realized that that was never going to come back. So he had one choice, and that was to take this one brief moment and end himself so that the Reapers would not use him anymore. And he also frees himself from this prison by now being dead, which is better than being captive in his own body.
Yeah, and that's why I said in this tweet that I put out before we went live here is that if this is true, I feel like there's a whole section of the fan base that maybe hasn't before and maybe they will now. They'll kind of feel bad for Saren because, I mean, if that is what's happening inside Saren's mind, I feel terrible. That's tragic.
Yeah. Yeah. And although he wasn't a good guy before, the question of like, when does he actually really lose control isn't easy to determine. So that might go back quite a while.
Right. So if Saren was, you know, indeed trapped inside his own mind and then exerted just enough of this remaining willpower to kill himself, then that just adds to this immense tragedy of his story and how it ends.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, poor Saren. I guess that's going to do it for this episode. Where are we going next week?
So next week, I actually just got confirmation, maybe not next week, but in the near future, we will be covering the music of Mass Effect Andromeda. Yes. And one of the, famous guests of ours, Pipe Man, has agreed to set up the, lecture that we will get some more lessons about Mass Effect music. You know, the Mass Effect music episode was one of our most popular.
Yeah, people love that stuff. Yeah, absolutely. So that's exciting. That's super cool. All right. Well, make sure to tune in for future episodes to find out when that's happening. 2 weeks from now is our patron chat, because that's the last Friday of the month on the 27th, I believe, 26th. So come join us for that. There's still time to sign up if you want to do that. And Sam, what other stuff do you have going on?
I am streaming more Mass Effect of my personal canon playthrough. I am in Mass Effect 2. It is modded Mass Effect 2, so you might see some things you're not too familiar with. But I'm streaming that every weekend on Saturdays, probably around like anywhere between noon and 3 p.m. Pacific. That's 3 to 6 on Eastern time. So give me a follow on Twitch. You'll get the notification when I go live. You can find me on Twitch at N7TheLegend, same handle for Twitter.
Yeah, go check out his stream. Go check out some of my other shows. I do a bunch of other lore casts about the Lord of the Rings and Fallout and Starfield and a bunch of other stuff. All that can be found at robotsradio.net, or you can just look it up on the podcast you're listening to right now. And Sam and I will be back next week. Thank you to everybody who shows up for the live show. We absolutely love you being here and seeing all the comments and giving us ideas even while we're talking about these episodes live. We really do appreciate all of your support. All right. Have a wonderful rest of your week, and we will see you next time. Stay safe out there. Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.